Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
Thank you, Bruce. Sterling work, as always, down in our Nismo pit lane, and he'll be handing over very shortly. They're still side by side. Well, they were side by side earlier on. That was a short time ago. And then finally, as they exit the slow zone implemented for the 42 Strakker car, Fessler gets the jump on Nick Tandy.
Although it's not actually a battle for a place, nor even to unlap himself, but it's to get one out of the two laps that he is behind back. We're in a relatively unusual situation, actually, Johnny, in that with 5.5 hours to go, there is only one car on the lead lap. The leading Porsche, number 19, has lapped the field, and I can't remember who was here for the nighttime stint. I think it was you, wasn't it, when I was saying how Nick Tandy did a storming nighttime stint. You seem to be Nick Tandy's secret weapon, because your stints match with his.
I've commentated on Nick Tandy since he was in mini stocks on short oval.
Since you were wearing short trousers and long socks.
We do go back a long way, I have to say.
But you are his lucky mascot, because this is another storming stint from Nick. And again, he's the quickest guy out there. And there was a moment when I thought René Rast was going to start closing in on him, but he's not. He's just extended the margin to the point where he's pulling away now from Mark Webber. And I mean, what more can you put on your CV other than I've pulled away from a Grand Prix winner?
300 laps up, so nice little milestone this for Porsche as they seek their 17th win at this world famous race. And it's the 19 car that they're putting all their hopes on now, as Trussers says, the 19 car having lapped everybody. René Rast in second position in the number 9 car for Audi, and then it's the second of the Porsches, Timo Bernhardt, on board the number 17 car. 9:30 here at Le Sartre, and therefore we need to do one of these.
The RadioLeMans.com forum is full of people just like you.
People who have opinions and aren't afraid to share them, just like you.
People who love all forms of motorsport, just like you.
At the track, on the radio, online.
Go to RadioLeMans.com and click on the forum button.
RadioLeMans.com.
The hourly update, powered by Audi.
So we're 18 and a half hours into the race, 9:30 on Sunday morning. Porsche still leads the race, as they have done since lap 253, and we're now on lap 300. So a good 4 hours of this race have been led now by the number 19 car. It has a lead now of a full lap on the rest of the field. Nick Tandy is at the wheel. In second place is the number 9 Audi. That has René Rast at the wheel. Let's say a lap behind the rest of the race leader. In third place is number 17, Timo Bernhardt, at the wheel of the number 17 red and white Porsche. And he is just 4 seconds behind René Rast and is angling to make it a Porsche 1-2 within the next few minutes. In fourth place is the second of the Audis, the number 7 car, which has fallen 2 laps behind the race leaders, mainly due to a bizarre bodywork failure on that car, which caused it to spend quite a long time in the pits having that repaired. In fifth place is the number 8 Audi, Oliver Jarvis, at the wheel of that car. He's 1.5 minutes behind the Marcel Fessler car, just on his way out of the pits at the moment. And in sixth place is the third of the Porsches. So we've got the three Audis and the three Porsches in the top six still. And number 18, Neil Yarny, is now a lap behind Oliver Jarvis. In seventh and eighth places are the two Toyotas, as they have been throughout. Remarkable reliability being shown by both of those. Number 2, Alex Wurz, now 6 laps behind the race leader, and Anthony Davidson back in the number 1 car, a full 8 laps behind the race leader. In ninth place is a leading LMP2 car, still the KCMG Orica, going very, very strongly indeed on 272 laps now completed. In second place in LMP2 is number 26, the G-Drive Ligier with Julien Canal behind the wheel. And in third place in LMP2 is car number 38, the Jota Ligier with its Judd engine with Mitch Evans behind the wheel. And he is a minute and a half behind the G-Drive car. So not impossible that that might change before the end of the race. And just to say, just behind that, not very far behind, is the number 48 Murphy Prototypes Orica with Mark Patterson driving it at the moment. GTE Pro, Corvette leads the way at the moment by 8.5 seconds from Tony Villander in the Ferrari Italia, 458 Italia. So it's 64, Tommy Milner leads 51, Tony Villander. And Jörg Bergmeister is now in the number 91 Porsche in third place. And the Porsche isn't that far behind either, just a minute behind the two battling Corvette and Ferrari. And sadly, the closest Aston Martin in GTE Pro is back in fifth place in the class and is actually now 4 laps behind the class leader. In GTE Am, it's still the Aston Martin, Paul Dallalana, leading the way there, and he has 2 minutes and 20 seconds of an advantage over Victor Chaitor, number 72, in the SMP Ferrari 458 Italia. And in third place in the GTE Am class, still the number 77 Porsche, the Dempsey Racing Proton Porsche, Marco Seyfried, is currently behind the wheel, and he is a further three laps behind the other two cars in the class. So 98, 72 and 77 are the top three in GTE Am.
The hourly update on Radio Le Mans with Audi.
Mobile One Radio Le Mans 91.2 FM here at the track and around the world on RadioLeMans.com. I did predict that there might be a sting in the tail in this race with still 5 hours and 24 minutes to go. And well, the P2 leader, Richard Bradley in the KCMG Orica 05 has come to a grinding halt at Arnage Corner. It's overshot that section of the track, was joined very swiftly by Ollie Plaar in the number 23 Nissan GTR LM Nismo, and that car has got back to the pit lane, but the KCMG car is still parked up at Arnage. The door was flipped open and Richard Bradley was beckoning over marshals to try and get the car restarted. A lead of 4 minutes for the 47 car over the 26 Ligier from G-Drive, driven at the moment by Julien Canal. And it's back moving, is the 47 car. So Richard Bradley has done the old reset and the car is moving once again. Maybe KCMG can breathe once more, but the Singapore-born Richard Bradley, that will have certainly tested his reserve a little bit, because for a moment there, it was almost as if he was staring retirement in the face. But the Orica, oh, it's slow again at the Dunlop Bridge. The problem's not sorted. All of a sudden, the power cut out again for that Orica 05.
It was a 6 minute 44 second lap on its previous lap, Johnny. And he didn't go into the pits, interestingly, having fixed it. And then you just caught sight of it stopping again, did you?
Yes, the top of the hill at Dunlop Bridge. And that's exactly where the power should be kicking back in again, heading for Forest Esses. So their car definitely slow, because there are some that's all. No, Nick Damon has pointed out to me that there's actually a slow zone up there, so the car has not actually cut out. It is decreasing speed to go into a slow zone at zones 4 and 5, so we should be okay actually.
Right. We had the Nissan and the class leading 47 car both off at Arnage at the same time. However, those were completely unrelated, and the Nissan has made it back to the pits, but once again they've had to take that front engine cover off.
So the next question is, have we explained the slow zone up at the Dunlop Bridge and the Forest Esses? What is that in place for?
It's the Chris Cumming car, I think, number 34, the 8 Racing Ligier with the HPD engine, which is, I think, the one that's off there.
It may also be Nick Leventis in the 42 Stracker, which has made its way round to that sort of area of the track, which
got
is at the S's.
Yeah, I don't think it would have got that far.
recovery of car 42 in zone 5, which is the S's.
Oh, right, okay. Yes,
Nick Leventis actually was able to coast down the hill from the Dunlop Bridge and got round through the Forest S's.
But let's make the point, as far as it was. Fans of KCMG, you can breathe again because the car was just trundling its way through at the required speed limit through zones 4 and 5. So Richard Bradley has whatever the problem was up at Arnage, he seems to have solved it and did not, as Paul Truswell quite rightly points out, did not feel the need to pit at the end of that lap. Marco Seyfried also going through that part of the circuit now, the S's and on towards Tête Rouge, and Marco driving the third placed GTE AM car, which is the Porsche from Proton Competition, behind the 72 of Viktor Shytov or SMP Racing, the class led by Paul Dalla-Lana, as Paul said in the update. So 5 hours and 20 minutes to go. Breathe again. Julien Canal is in second position in the Ligier. Actually, the gap came down to only a minute and 25 seconds now, so it's certainly come down by a considerable margin the length of time that Richard Bradley was sat at Arnage.
Yeah, we'll try and keep an eye on where they are relatively on the circuit, because we now have lost the slow zone at the S's.
Because the Straka car is now within the overlap of the Armco barrier, within a safe position. So recovery of that has taken place. Nick Leventis, by the way, still sat on the side pod, no doubt trying to sort out the issue. But there's smoke coming out the back of that car, and it looks like the liquid that was draining out of it has now stopped. Now, sometimes that's a good sign. Sometimes it's a very bad sign, because it means the liquid's run out. So down to Shay Adam, who is part of our Nismo pit lane team. Shay.
The absolute least amount
of... Oh wow, that was a tough one. That had some reserves in it, but yeah, the car's good. We're on a bit of a managed program right now, so tough to stick to the number, but in any event, yeah, I think we're in a good place.
Are you going to get back in the car?
You know, I'm not sure. I think depending on how the race plays out, we're good between Matt and Pedro to the end. And I think if we have love to finish.
That would be something for the record books for sure for you and the team as well. What's it like driving out there leading at Le Mans?
Yeah, you know what? I think any time in a 24-hour race when you can see this come up and you've got a car in the lead, you're in a rare and special place, so that's how I feel. It's a real privilege to be working with these guys, and everyone's just put their heart and soul into it, so it's great to be able to pay back.
Fingers crossed. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Shay.
Voice of Paul Dalla-Lana from the number 98 Aston Martin, with Matthias Lauda now at the wheel, and the leader has pitted. Nick Tandy stays on board the number 19 Porsche. That was the car's 23rd pit stop. There was also a stop, by the way, for the 7 Audi, and we didn't mention the number 9 Audi coming in either, René Rast, which looked like a pretty standard stop for what is now the third placed car, circulating about a minute behind Timo Bernhardt, the second of the Porsche's number 17. We'll go up the other end of the Nismo pit lane and speak to Owen Mildenhall. What have you got, Owen?
Just a routine stop for the 91 Porsche, the third place GT Pro car. Mr. Jörg Bergmeister stayed in the car, just fuel, no tyres, and he was back out again.
Thank you for that update. And more information to throw on the fact that the leader's been in, Paul?
Not so much the leader being in, because that's Nick Tandy staying in the car and going on for a triple stint. What will be interesting to see is at the end of this stint whether Nick Tandy is able to stay in the car for a quadruple stint, as it's kind of whether it's in nighttime mode or whether they start hedging their bets and go to triple stints. The size of the margin that the number 19 Porsche has is almost large enough that I would say, if you need to play it safe, play it safe. So don't necessarily push the parameters. You can win this race just by staying safe. And maybe that will mean they start going down to triple stinting the tyres on the Porsche. And I think they should have enough. In fact, I'm sure they'll have enough tyres of their 12 sets that they're allocated in order to get it to the checkered flag, even by triple stinting them. Rene Rast, at the wheel of the number 9 Audi, we said that one came into the pits as well. He stayed in the car, as Johnny said, but he goes on to a quadruple stint. So Audi are still quadruple stinting, no question about that.
Message on the timing screen, which tells us that cars 7 and 19, the incident involving those two machines, is now under investigation. That's where we were suggesting there may have been side-to-side contact between Nick Tandy, the race leader at the time, and still, in fact, and Marcel Fessler. It was during the slow zone through Dunlop Curve that was initially put in place to enable the Strecker car to be recovered. And, of course, the Strecker car now down towards the Forest S's, but that will be looked at.
And if anything, it was Marcel Fessler who was being pushy, and Nick Tandy was just playing things by the book, because he was just sitting there, and Marcel Fessler was kind of trying to get up on the inside of him. But that was my interpretation. We'll see what happens.
Not allowed to speculate, Paul.
Am I not?
No.
I'm sure I've got speculation in my contract.
You've got to stick to the facts and nothing else.
Maybe they gave me the wrong contract.
I mentioned Strecker, and Shay Adam has an update on the number 42 car.
I just checked in with our smoking dog compatriots and gave them thumbs up, thumbs to the middle, thumbs down, and a toolkit to give to Nick Leventis so that he can shift manually. They'll have to take the engine cover off out there, driver doing all the work, so Nick Leventis is about to get his hands really dirty. That him back to the garage where they can do work and hopefully get out to finish the race.
Yeah, fingers crossed for Strecker, who, as I say, are up towards Tête Rouge now in the 42 car, but safely off the track, so back to green flag running all the way around this 8.5 mile circuit. And it's very busy towards Indianapolis now, with five cars circulating together, not necessarily for position, but there is certainly lap retaking place there. One of the Oak cars sneaking by a Ferrari into Arnage. Also in that sequence, I reckon it's Marco Seyfried in the number 77 Proton competition car, and the Krone Racing Ligier pointing in the right direction now. I say Nick Johnson at the wheel.
The beauty of having had relatively few retirements is we've still got a very busy racetrack out there, which is jolly nice. Just going back to what Shay was just saying, and it was a bit of a crackly line, and I was crunching food anyway, so I couldn't hear it. It was crackling double. Did she say they were going to take a toolkit out to him so that he could put it into gear?
She did. Yes, she did. Correct. I know there was a toolkit going on. I'm not sure whether there's a gear problem, but yes, by the sounds of things, that's what's going to happen.
Because you have to work on the car with the tools that are carried on the car.
That's what I thought. So you can't have outside assistance with extra tools taken to wherever the car is.
No.
And with the amount of water that was pouring out of the back of that, I think it's going to need more than a screwdriver and a couple of cable ties to get that going.
What they might be doing, I know what they've got, because there is a toolkit on board the car.
Yes.
What they'll be doing is they'll be showing Nick Leventis, this is the tool you need to use, and they'll be holding it up so he can then look in the toolbox so that he can find that tool. That would be allowed.
Yeah.
But to kind of leave the tools somewhere and then for Nick Leventis to find them
conveniently
would not be the first time, but wouldn't be within the letter of the rules.
I think not be the first time would be a bit of an understatement, Paul.
And it would be very much in the spirit of Le Mans.
Since 1923, people have been finding bits of toolkit and finding bits of stuff in the grass verge, etc., around this circuit when they've needed to.
Grass is so short, though, these days.
Yes. Yes, it's no hiding place in every sense. But if they're out to talk Nick Leventis through that, but I still stand by the fact that there was an awful lot of liquid pouring out of the back of that car, and that can't be a good sign. And he's still got an awfully long way to drive it back, even if they did get it going.
Three GT cars totally together down from Tête Rouge towards the first chicane. One of those is the number 62 Scuderia Corsa car, by the way, which is driven by Jeff Siegel at the moment, battling away with Marco Seyfried in car 77. So that is for position. Those two cars separated by just 1.2 seconds. And also in the mix, although different class, and further down the order actually is Alex McDowell in the number 99 Hanergy Aston Martin. So he's trying to get laps back on these two GTE AM cars.
And all around the whole circuit there are battles, there are people getting unlapped, there are nips and tucks of everything. It really still is all the way in every class. You can go in any way you like.
Now, suitably about to speak to our Nismo pit lane team, one member of it, Shay Adam, is the man from Nismo, Darren Cox. And we are persevering with what was a crackly line a short time ago. I'm afraid we don't even have crackles now. And clearly there is an awful lot of radio frequency in and around the pit lane right now with 5 hours and 10 minutes to go. Radio traffic, I think, is going to increase, if anything, between now and the rest of the race. So news from the other end of our Nismo pit lane, and Owen Mildenhall, who has news on the 13 car, which is taking a stop, Owen.
Yeah, that's right, the number 13 Rebellion came into the pits, was put on dollies straight back into the garage, and the team have got the rear engine cover off and the rear wing off. There's a lot of people crowded around the back of the car. I can't actually see what the problem is at the moment, but I have seen a dreaded battery charge being plugged in, so I wonder if it may be some sort of alternator or problem, but I'll try and find out what the problem is. But there's a lot of work going on down here at the moment.
Thank you for that. The 64 Chevrolet Corvette continues to power on, its leading GTE Pro. In fact, let's give you a rundown of how the GTs stand at the moment with 5 hours and 9 minutes to go. It's Tommy Milner in the number 64 car that leads the way after 260 laps, leading by almost 10 seconds now from Tony Villander in the number 51 Ferrari 458 from AF Corsa. The 91 Porsche of Jörg Bergmeister is next in the sequence, but he's got over 2 minutes to try and find to be with those two cars. And as Ollie Gavin said, it will take a bit of bad luck for either the 64 or the 51 for the 91 to be back in the race. On for a podium, though, let us not forget, for Porsche team Manti. Fourth in GTE Pro is the 71 car of Davide Rigon from AF Corsa. Then it's Nicky Thiem in the 95 Dane train from Aston Martin. And the 99 car of Alex McDowell, it's next in the sequence. Sixth position for the Hanergy-backed car. GTE AM is headed by Matthias Lauda. We heard from Paul Dalalana not too long ago, and the 98 car on course for victory in GTE AM. Victor Scheitar is second position in number 72, the SMP Racing Ferrari, and then it's Jeff Siegel in 62, another Ferrari 458, the American run team. First time at Le Mans for Scuderia Corsa, and they're running three rookies, but on for a podium for the first time that they're here. They're having a good little battle though with Marco Seyfried in car 77. Back to Owen Mildenhall.
Here with Christian Apps. Christian, your car's just come into the garage. Can you tell me what the problem is with the car?
I'm not quite sure. I just suddenly felt a loss of power, and the guys are checking it now. I don't think they know yet what happened or what the issue is. But obviously, I had to come in. There was no point staying out there. There was no power at all. So hope they can fix it. They fixed a few issues already, so I'm quite sure they can also manage this, and then we will get back on.
And then this is your first Le Mans, am I right in thinking? How's it been for you? I know you've had a lot of problems, but how's your first Le Mans been for you?
It's been quite crazy, to be honest. It's my first ever 24-hour race. Basically, it was also the first time that I was in an LMP1 car, or in a prototype at all. So there were so many things for me to learn, and I'm just building up confidence with every stint I do, and it's a fantastic experience for me, and hopefully we get to the finish.
Well, I hope so, and I've got to say that the engine note of this car is a bit of a fan favourite with all the fans out there, so it must be very noisy for you, given you've been doing Formula E all year.
Yeah, it's definitely louder than my Formula E, but that's not too difficult. It's a great engine, I think. It's running pretty smooth. We had no issues up until now. I hope they can fix it, and then we will hear a good sound again.
Brilliant. Thank you, Daniel. I hope you get to the end. Thank you.
Daniel Apt with our man Owen Mildenhall there, fresh from the number 13 Rebellion Racing R1 with its AER engine, and you certainly can tell those cars coming round wherever you stood here at Circuit de la Sarre. Thank you for joining Mobile One Radio Le Mans for 2015 here at the track on 91.2 FM and around the world on RadioLeMans.com, not only in Sand but also Vision this year too with Studio Vision. You can find that on the homepage, very obviously placed, powered by Duke Video. You can see me and Paul Tarsi waving at the camera now, and also Paul Truswell, who sat at the mobile Woking data centre for 2015. He's brought the whole thing over the English Channel, and it's working pretty sweetly now, isn't it?
It's yes, we had a yes, pretty, it's good enough.
It's good enough.
It's better than good enough. It's worked very, very sweetly indeed, and I've I think been able to answer all of the questions that have been thrown at me, and several more besides. So another thank you to all of those people who made it possible. And just looking down to call in the next pit stoppers, as it were, and that is likely to be the second placed Porsche, which is currently being driven by Timo Bernhardt, number 17. And you know, the closer that we get to the end of this race, the more this looks like Porsche putting the pieces into place to make this into a 1-2 rather than just making it into a race win, because René Rast is falling away from the pace of Timo Bernhardt, and I don't think it's anything particularly to do with René, although he's obviously the newcomer to the Audi prototype fold. He has driven here at Le Mans before, and earlier on he was lapping quite quickly enough, but it would seem at the moment that the Porsches have found the sweet spot where they're able to lap more quickly than the Audis, and the Audis can't really keep up.
And it must be slightly bittersweet for René Rast to see that, because his early major career was in Porsches, of course. So he's looking at that badge and thinking, oh dear, maybe I backed the wrong horse here.
And well, proof time will be the proof of that
indeed.
One, won't it? But
yes.
René, I remember being very successful in Porsche Super Cup in his early career.
Indeed, yes, was very much the man to beat in that, and wasn't very often beaten.
2010 champion, 2009 just missed out when he was runner-up, but. I mean, the Porsche Super Cup has really bred some great sports car racing. It's so close at times, one make series, and whether you choose to stay with Porsches or indeed move to another manufacturer, the racecraft that you can learn in sort of mini enduro races that support Formula One Grand Prix, second to none. Nick Tandy with a lot of experience in the Porsche Super Cup too.
Exactly so, although just to go back to René Rast for a minute, he's been associated with Porsche, with Audi, I should say, since 2012, when he has been driving, since when he's been driving Audi R8s with a great deal of success as well. So he managed to dovetail those two together fairly successfully. Anyway, he's capable, but seemingly unable to keep up the pace of the two flying Porsches up ahead of him. But as I say, he's going to inherit second place. Back, actually might not, to be honest, because Timo Bernhardt is now sufficiently far ahead that he can get into the pits, get his fuel and get on his way again without losing that position. I think we'll see what happens. Timo Bernhardt due in the red Porsche then at the end of the lap that he is currently on, and it should be a fuel only pit stop for the Porsche, and as I say, it should be able to stay in second place. Although still a lap it's currently on the same lap as the leader, but as a result of the pit stop, he'll drop a lap behind the race leader.
But if the 17 can get in and out, then that's going to make an awful lot of difference simply to the psychology of this, that they're not anymore just trading places, that would put those Porsches strongly at the top of this field.
The 17 Porsche pits from second position, Timo Bernhardt at the wheel of the red Porsche. And I get the feeling that conditions are pretty good on the racetrack at the moment, because there are one or two personal best times for the car, that is, not necessarily for the driver on board right now, but it will be the best time for the driver as well, by nature of the fact that it's the best time for that individual car. But we're seeing lots of blue times, which indicate the best for that car so far in the whole of the race. And bearing in mind now we've had almost 19 hours of it, that shouldn't go unnoticed. Nick Johnson, the latest to do a personal best time for the 40 car, but I noticed also that Tony Villander did so in the 51 Ferrari. 64, Tommy Milner, thank you, also going quickly with an overall lap time, which was pretty good, and he's now bettered that through Sector 2 with an 89.6, so...
The strange thing is, we didn't get the happy hour period. Just didn't happen. Whether the weather wasn't quite right or whether people just weren't geared up for it, I don't know. But nobody really. I think the two Toyotas set personal best times during happy hour, but none of the Porsches or Audis did, which I found quite an interesting little aspect to it.
And looking at the timing screens with several blue sector times and lap times, you'd have to say that this is perhaps happy hour version 2.
Are we going to get a new fastest lap of the race? Bear in mind the best so far is from René Rast, a 317.647, which was done way back on lap 62.
When Felipe Albuquerque was driving the car, it wasn't Rast who was driving.
Okay, so it is bang on 10 o'clock in the morning here in France. Thank you for joining Mobile One Radio Le Mans. And Paul Tarsi is going to disappear. Is that your last stint for this year? Although we may well get voices on at the very end of our broadcast.
I think disappearing would be a tough one. But nonetheless, I'm going to take the headphones off and go and get some breakfast. Yes, that is my last one. Johnny, thank you very much indeed for your company. And I'm just going to sit and watch this motor race because it is going to be a stormer. Can't wait. And to everybody out there in Radio Le Mans land, thank you very much indeed. We'll talk to you soon.
Stay tuned to Mobile One Radio Le Mans. We have 5 hours to go.
At RadioLeMans.com, we live for endurance racing. Le Mans, Bathurst, the Nürburgring, Spa, Silverstone, Fuji, and many more great races on classic circuits around the world, all covered live. Now at Daytona, Sebring, Watkins Glen, Road America, and Road Atlanta to the list. IMSA Radio from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited is a new service bringing you coverage of every session of the Tudor United Sports Car Championship. Qualifying and race coverage from the Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge and the Support Series races. Live, free, and without commercial interruption. Direct to you. Look for the IMSA radio icon on the RadioLeMans.com homepage. The home of endurance racing.
RadioLeMans.com.
Greetings from the 83rd running of the Le Mans 24 Hours. Johnny Palmer here, broadcasting from the Mobile One Broadcast Centre, along with Paul Truswell. And now Marshall Pruitt, who is back alongside me in our commentary booth. We have our Nismo Pit Lane team as well, bringing you all the stories from the pit lane for the next hour. And it's 10 o'clock, so 5 hours to go. And people obviously coming and going. If you're at the track and listening to us on 91.2 FM, you'll have no doubt some one or two blanks to need to be filled in, and we can do that gladly. And Marshall, like me, a little earlier on, I had a snooze, you've had a snooze, and there were one or two questions you need to ask now. So let's try and fill in the blanks for you.
Yeah, let's work through the lovely advantage that our friends at Porsche have with the number 19. It's also great to see, frankly, the 19, the young guns car, battling with Audi's young gun car, the number 9. Granted that number 9 is currently two laps down.
Yes. So the 19 has such an advantage. Well, the last time you and I were on, it was all about the 19 and the
exactly.
7, wasn't it? And the 7 car, we still need to get to the bottom of exactly what happened. Was Marcel Fessler at the wheel when it came in minus some bodywork?
Yes, indeed. And I think the Audi crew themselves are a bit mystified by what happened. Fessler didn't confess to having hit anything, indeed asserted that he hadn't hit anything. But things like that don't just happen. So I suspect there was a minor brush, side-by-side type of brush with something, which caused some hairline fracture. And then with the unusual aerodynamics of the Audi R18 e-tron Quattro, which takes air into the car and then diffuses it literally through the rear of the car, not only through the diffuser but also out of the rear wheel arches, through the holes in the sides of the rear wheel arches. And I suspect that all of that funny air pressure set up some kind of pressure problem, and not the whole bodywork, but a piece of the bodywork was torn from the bits that it was supposed to be attached to, and was left in the middle of the road.
That would be a perfect thing for one of our pit reporters to get the bottom of, simply because these cars deal with pressure the entire race. Pressure doesn't just magically make bodywork pop off.
As soon as Marcel decides to get out of the car, because he seems to have been in there forever, and this is a long stint for the Swiss driver, but yes, that is something on our list, to make a beeline for Marcel Fessler to try and throw a bit more light on exactly what happened. By the way, the 48 Murphy Prototypes car has recently looped at what looked like Arnage. Could have been Mulsanne corner, only got a glimpse of that.
I think it was Mulsanne. Mark Patterson at the wheel.
Yeah, the American Mark Patterson driving the fourth placed Orica 03R. He's got it now pointing in the right direction and is heading for Forest S's. Still these impressive times coming through for all sorts of cars up and down the order. I just wonder whether we're moments away from a new fastest lap marshal for it. We didn't quite get happy hour overnight,
yeah,
but clearly the air is just right for some really good times right now.
Yeah, and it is hotting up. I did walk down to Tête Rouge and back within the past 2 hours, and it's not hot, no, but you can definitely feel that it is starting to come up just a little bit. Cloud cover keeping the sun from hitting the track directly, but I think we are in the last bits of that sweet spot for speed.
Couple of pit stops for GTE Pro, by the way. Tommy Milner's brought the Chevrolet 64 in, the Corvette C7R, and that looked like a clean stop. 1:03 for the American team, and it's back out into the race. So too the 51 Ferrari of AF Corsa. Gian Maria Bruni taking over from Tony Vallander, so there was a driver change, but actually the stops were fairly similar.
And when we were here a few hours ago, we were wondering if and when the 51 would make its presence felt. Granted, 24 seconds to Milner in the Corvette, but we do have that Corvette Ferrari battle right now.
And did lead the class an awful long time ago. They were nose to tail, lap after lap, but that gap has opened up now, Paul Trusswell, between the Chevy and the Ferrari.
It has indeed. See how long it's able to do so. The main reason for it doing that was when they came out of the pits, the Corvette was on a new set of tyres and the Ferrari on a used set of tyres. And although Vallander was able to keep up for the first few laps, as the stint has gone on, so tyre degradation has got worse, and that's why Tony Vallander's not now able to keep up with the Corvette as well as he was. You just said something that triggered something in my mind, Johnny, which was about Marcel Fessler not getting out of that car because he seems to have been in it forever. You're not far wrong. He's been in it for 3 hours, 38 minutes and 50 seconds now. So he's going to have to get out of that car within the next 20 minutes, otherwise he's going to run into drive time problems. He's currently on his eighth lap of the stint, and so he'll be wanting to get up to 13, which obviously is another five laps away. Five laps times 3.5, it takes him up to about 15 minutes, so he's going to be running perilously close to the 4 hours by the time this stint does actually finish. Although it is a monster stint from Fessler, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it'll end up being a five shift stint. That was Fessler who brought the car in before the bodywork, or when the bodywork problem happened, and went out again afterwards. And during the point where they changed the bodywork, they also changed the tyres, so the tyres haven't lasted as long as Fessler has in this particular driving shift.
And Shay Adam, who is part of our Nismo pit lane team, can add a little bit more flesh to the bones on the situation with the number 7. If the microphone works, and we have had one or two niggly issues with Shay's microphone purely because the amount of radio frequency bouncing around right now. Not hearing you, I'm afraid, Shay, but we'll keep persevering and try and solve that problem. A couple of minutes away from updating you with the P2 battle. By the way, Mark Patterson now pitting. He's done one more lap since the spin, hasn't he?
Yeah, continued on.
Yeah, so that was presumably the scheduled end to his stint. He may well stay in the car. From fourth place, though, he does come down pit road. Meanwhile, the KCMG Orica, which is just heading through Dunlop Curve now and braking for the chicane at the top of the hill. Bit of a drama for Richard Bradley not so long ago when the car came to a grinding halt at Arnage Corner and he lost about 3 minutes of the lead that he had, but that's extending out again, I think. Julien Canal, we're not in a situation right now where the sequence of the cars, where they are on the lap, to be able to tell you the difference.
Just quickly, Mark Patterson, you mentioned coming into the pits. He still hasn't done his 4 hours driving time, which is the minimum that he is compelled to do by virtue of being the silver stroke bronze driver in the Murphy Prototypes team car. So he'll still have to go out and do a few more laps in order to get up to his 4 hour minimum driving time.
And that's 4 hours across the
across
race.
Across the whole race,
isn't
yes.
it? In a cumulative yes. thing, you yes. have that, to that, do them all in one go.
That's where 4 hours becomes a minimum rather than 4 hours as a maximum.
Yeah. Three of the P2 cars pitting, in fact. From second position, Julien Canal for G-Drive and their Ligier. Patterson, we've told you about. Laurens Vanthoor, the Belgian driver in from the 34 car as well. Their Oak Racing Ligier stopping. That was a decent in-lap for Laurens. And it remains to be seen whether he's going to stay on board. Nick Tandy continues to lead. Lap 3:12 now. And still ahead by a whole lap over everybody else from Timo Bernhardt and René Rast. That was certainly the situation a
yes,
short time
is,
ago.
Yeah.
yeah, so he's lapped the field and that hasn't changed.
Last lap of 3:19.7. I mean, we're not relaxing at all, Johnny, with the leading KCMG. Orica and P2, also interesting there, were barring that brief stoppage on track and a brief stoppage in pit lane to replace right side number plate. That car in its Le Mans debut has just been almost unstoppable.
Yeah, the best lap of this stint from Nick Tandia, 3 minutes 19.015, and he's now on the ninth lap of the stint. And it's looking, if it carries on at this rate, that it might actually turn into the fastest stint of the race. Now, his first two stints were affected by slow zones and safety cars, so this is his first chance, really, to have a fully green racetrack to really put the hammer down. And what I'll be interested to see is whether he is, as I say, chooses to do the triple stint, or they'd leave him out for the four stint shift. But I really wouldn't be at all surprised if we don't see this Porsche just taking things a little bit easy, because with a one lap cushion, that's when you can just start, even with over 4.5 hours of the race remaining, you can just start to think about how are we going to get this to get to the finish without any problems.
Johnny, that has to be the story of the race. Here we are with almost just under 5 hours left in the race, and the leaders are turning qualifying laps, things last year that would have eclipsed qualifying pole time. Simply amazing to see the pace at which this race is taking place. Obviously, we've had a number of yellows, but nonetheless, in terms of outright pace, outright speed, what we've seen in 2015 with the P1 hybrids, it's fairly ridiculous. I also don't know if we're going to see that again with some of the things they're looking at for, well, I think the ACO and FIA has found their comfort level for speed with the P1 hybrids. I don't know if we are going to come back next year and see these same types of speed. So for those at home enjoying and those here at the track, soak it in.
Yep, savour these moments, particularly in the LMP2 battle. I gave you a flavour of what was going on there in terms of the recent pit stops. It's a class still led then by Richard Bradley in the KCMG Orica 05, number 47, from now Roman Roussanoff, who's taken over from Julien Canal in the number 26 Ligier with the G-Drive backing. Then it's Mitch Evans in the number 38 Gibson, which is the car run by Jota Sport, last year's winner and on course for a podium. It's actually very narrow margin, though, between Roussanoff and Mitch Evans, just 1.9 seconds where the 26 car has rejoined the race. The 28 car is the sister machine for G-Drive, and Ricardo Gonzalez at the wheel of that number 28 car in fourth position. Laurens Vanthoor is fifth in number 34, the Oak Racing Ligier. Mark Patterson still in pit lane, but scored as in sixth position. Seventh place is David Markazov, the 27 SMP Racing entered BR01. John Fogarty in the 31 Extreme Speed Motorsports Ligier next up, ahead of Ivan Bellerossa in the 45 car. There were one or two people who unkindly said the 45 car wouldn't get very far into this race. Well, to be fair, with 4 hours and 46 minutes to go, very new squad to the European Le Mans Series and indeed Le Mans itself, they're doing pretty well.
And they've gone about this race, frankly, the same way I would if I were their size and had their resources. They have not been attacking the course relentlessly. They've been very smart for a debut, per se. So if you look at what they've done, are they going to win? No. Are they going to podium? Very unlikely. But are they going to go away with the knowledge that they need to come back and be more competitive next year? Absolutely. Another thing that's been impressing me as well is Mitch Evans. He's definitely making a case for long-term employment here if this is where he wants to end up. We know he wants Formula One, as we all do. Hell, I do, and I'm 44. But if that were to not work out for young Mitch, I think he's shown folks that he deserves to be here in a prototype.
And the Jota squad are used to winning races as well. A good place to apply your trade in sports car racing. Problems for the 37 SMP Racing BR01 with a rear left puncture. So car 37 is touring its way around the latter part of the lap. This is Mikhail Elishin at the wheel of the car, actually on an out lap. So the tyres may
out
be
lap
fresh.
Turns into an in lap and then another out lap, unfortunately, for the Russian.
That might be a case of double seats. In fact, lapped by the sister car there as they work their way through the second stages of the Porsche curves. I'd be surprised if that was a brand new set of tyres. They will have been double, triple, maybe even quadruple stinting those at SMP Racing, and it's gone bang on the left rear, but not too far to go now, and thankfully the tyre is still in one piece, so it hasn't started to eat away, or it's having said
there's not a lot of life left in that to stay on the rims.
We're close to seeing the bodywork being churned up by the tyre. I think he's just about going to make it. So Mikhail breaks the beam now over the white line at the start of the pit lane, and the team are there ready to receive the BR01. Another good time this time for Viktor Shytar, who is running in second position in the GTE AM division. That's the car's best time of the race so far. Trying to close in on Matthias Lauda. It's just on a 4.01, and Shytar found about 4 seconds on the leading Aston. So the BR01 comes to a halt and the tyre will be changed. Are they going to change all four corners? No, it looks like just a fresh tyre for the rear left that is ready.
The one of the features of having the regulations the way they work, Johnny, is that if you do have a puncture, then if you don't have all the rest of the tyres, and it's so they're going to do the rest of the tyres. I was going to say, if you don't have all the rest of the tyres left on your allocation, there are 4 tyres in addition that you can use to replace punctures. And Marshall, I'm not quite sure if you saw, I think they just changed the rears there, didn't they? Or did they do the rears and the fronts?
Just the rears from what I saw.
Okay. Let's get confirmation from our man on the spot, part of our Nismo pit lane team, Owen Mildenhall.
Yeah, you're right, it was just a rear change, and Mikko Elishin also did a really nice job driving the car back, because there was hardly any damage to the bodywork, just a little bit of rubber marking, but no damage to the bodywork.
And the 4 tyres you talk about are jokers, effectively, aren't they?
They are in addition to the 12 sets that you're allowed. So you're allowed 12 sets, i.e. 48 tyres, and then 4 in addition, so 52 tyres altogether to do the whole 24 hours on.
Pit stop for the number 8 Audi R18 e-tron Quattro, and it's Ollie Jarvis at the wheels there. Also, do we have one of the rebellions about to stop? The 13 car of Dom Kreiheimer still circulating in 21st position, and the 12 car Nick Heidfeld way down with various issues for the other rebellion R1.
Certainly. Also due in, Johnny, is the number 9 Rene Rast Audi out of third place. So kind of in the Audi pit stop cycle at the moment. The Rene Rast car being the best Audi that they've got at the moment, and say with that car in third place. And over the last, I would say 2 hours, Rene Rast has really dropped away from the Porsches, and I think that's been a kind of a double whammy, Marshall. It's been the Audis not quite going as quickly, but the Porsches are going quicker. The kind of two things going in opposite directions.
Watching them through traffic was also quite interesting. You can see that the Audi drivers are able to drive their cars harder in traffic, meaning slightly more angle, a little bit more slide. They can throw the cars wherever they want. Unfortunately, when they get onto a straightaway, those Porsches flex their muscles. So, to your point, what we've seen so far now with fewer cars on the way, more open track, fairly optimal track conditions, we've just seen the Porsches put their horsepower down. In the slower corners, though, definitely interesting to see the Audi step and a little bit claw a little bit back.
Yeah, exactly so, and certainly the way the pendulum swings. There was a time when it was seemingly yesterday swinging towards Audi. At the moment, it's swinging back towards Porsche, and the main issue at the moment is all just question marks over whether the Porsche can be reliable. They've certainly got the speed, they've certainly got the pit lane strategy sorted out. It now just becomes a question of the final four hours and 40 minutes of the race that remains.
Somebody new in the commentary box. Hugh Chamberlain joins us.
He's not new.
Well, no, not this year, I think, right? This is the first time you've been on, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it?
Probably.
We had people on Twitter early on saying, where is the annual Hugh Chamberlain interview on Radio Le Mans, at mobile1radiolemans.com? And I said, well, it's going to appear at any moment.
Well,
and
it did.
I'm lucky enough to be able to conduct it myself. How are you, Hugh?
I'm extremely well, thank you, because unlike most of you, I managed to get some sleep last night.
Actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Cheat.
I know.
I was about yesterday, but you were very busy.
Car in the pit lane is the number 9 Rene Rasta Audi R18 Quattro.
And this will be a driver change, Johnny.
Will be a driver change. A reminder that we're not only in sand, but also in vision this year, courtesy of Studio Vision, which is embedded on the RadioLeMans.com website, powered by Duke Video. So if you look straight down that lens, Hugh.
Pretty,
wave to the people at
pretty,
home.
Aren't we?
Oh, just aren't we just?
As a dual.
Yes.
Or a duo.
So what's new in the life of Hugh Chamberlain? I saw you at Imola earlier on this year. You were running one of the LMP3 cars.
Helping out.
Yes.
Helping them, I think it is. Yes. It was a new team and new to endurance racing anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually quite impressed with the motor cars, because the concept, if you read it, you think, it's got to be mad. You can't produce a car for that sort of money. but if you produce 10 or 12, Lawrence has shown that you probably can produce them for that sort of money. And they're a very good car, and an ideal stepping stone up into the proper stuff, without being rude about P3. But you'd never have them here, I can't see. I doubt. And possibly they'll run them on Saturday morning next year, but... that's merely a Chamberlainism. I don't really believe that, but there we are. It might be.
They did run here at test day, and many people would have thought that was the precursor to them being included in the rules for the entry. But Lawrence Tomlinson was pretty adamant when we interviewed him from Ginetta to say, probably never going to happen.
Well, he would know much more than I, but I'd be surprised if they didn't. It is an ACO idea.
Yeah.
And things that are ACO stamped ideas normally go on to be something, and I'm not suggesting that P2 becomes P1 and P3 becomes P2, but I do think that they were trying to do something with the LMPC, yeah, the old Formula Le Mans cars, or the Courage P65, as you remember them in 1923. So it's been a long time progressing from the LMPC to what I think is going to be the replacement of P3.
Yeah.
But they're good cars. And, of course, they look like cars that are built and designed and built for today rather than something that is an outgoing concept of the open two-seater.
It's just Ginetta that have those chassis at the moment, but there is here this weekend on display, I think on the Oak Racing Hospitality area, a new LMP3 car from Ligier, which looks great in the carbon.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Tempted?
No. Me? No.
I think it's going to be good to have some competition within that class.
Oh, for sure. And there's no question that the other companies will produce cars. But it's the old story, really, that is the mess of, in inverted commas, of P2. How do you control a cost cap?
Yeah.
If you have a multi-billionaire who says, I think I'm going to make myself a car, and my accounts show that I bought it for 150 grand. How is anybody going to argue? Mm. And you look at it and you say, that didn't cost 150 grand. That's rubbish. But there will be people who produce them, and if they're prepared to sell a copy of, at 150 grand, then that's what happens. But it's the same with P2. Only if you look at the cars there now, they were probably produced, or some of them were certainly produced for slightly more than the 300 and thingy bob that they're supposed to be now. But it's, but the regulations are there to stop it. There's only supposed to be one tuner of engines per manufacturer, and because Nissan have got so many, then there are two or three producers of tuners of these motor cars, or the engines. So it's very difficult to control the cost cap, very difficult. But it's simply a case of, well, you've made one for yourself, I'm sorry, but if I want to buy one from you, you have to sell it to me for X, yeah. Being P3, P2. And that is going to be damn difficult if you have so much money you can produce them.
Just getting confirmation via social media that the number 55 Ferrari has officially retired now, having run out of fuel and got stranded out on the circuit. So car 55 from AF Corsa, sadly not going to reach the end of the race. And Paul Truswell, an update on...
Well, I was going to say, presumably as well, the Strecker car is...
Number 42.
Going to be, if not a retirement already officially posted, then I can't see how much longer it's going to last. I mean, it's not on the timing lists at the moment. And the SMP Ferrari has also just had a moment at the Indianapolis left-hander, and this is the car which is second placed, yep, in GTE AM, with Victor Scheitar behind the wheel, having just lost it on the way through Indianapolis, Johnny, behind a slower car.
Well, he was pushing really hard because there had been the car's personal best time only a few moments ago, and he was desperately trying to catch up with Matthias Lauda, not getting a chance to witness the incident again to tell you exactly what happened down there at Indianapolis. But certainly the 17 Porsche, driven by Timo Bernhardt, was briefly held up there by one of the GTE AM Porsches. Race leader is in, so Nick Tandy deciding to pit on lap 316, and this will be pit stop number 24.
And this is another scheduled pit stop for what I am hesitant to call a very clockwork-like run from Porsche. And it looks like Nick Tandy is going to stay behind the wheel. So Porsche continuing then to do four stints for every set of tyres.
Just a reminder that Mark Patterson came in for a stop, which I thought was scheduled a long while ago now, and the car, the Murphy Prototypes Orica 03R, hasn't actually left pit lane, so that's stuck in there. Still scored as 6th position behind Laurens Vanthoor, but losing time hand over fist to David Markusoff in the SMP Racing BR01. So race leader back into the race. And isn't it so interesting, Hugh Chamberlain, that the race leader is kind of the young gun car? It's not the season World Endurance Championship Porsche, but actually the extra one for Spa and this event at Le Mans. And also a car going particularly well is the number 9 Audi, which again is not the regular season car. So it's all the youngsters doing particularly well.
Irritating, isn't it?
You're kind of getting in the way of other people's championships.
Yeah, I know, it's not good enough. I'm not into ability, or I hate ability, but it's, in fact, what happens, I think, is that you get these guys, and they have, if you have luck here, at Le Mans you have to have a certain amount of luck, and if you're a seasoned man and you take the mickey and try to scuttle past somebody, that's one thing, but if you're a young lad and you might back out a bit because you're worried about what your boss might tell you, then you can get away with it much better in some way.
But I think as well, Hugh, the focus is very much for these guys on Le Mans only, whereas for the others, it's just one race in the World Endurance Championship. All right, it's the biggest race in the World Endurance Championship, but for both the 9 and the 19 cars from Audi and Porsche respectively, it's the culmination of their season here this weekend. And you know, and you must come into the race thinking, you know, right, have we done everything that we need to do? Have we checked the all the things. I mean, you know, you have lists probably still dating back to when you ran cars here of all the things that have to be done. And I'm sure you must find it a big help if the drivers are coming and saying, "Have you done this? Have you done that?"
Yeah, sure. You do that. I mean, you take. It's a foolish lad who doesn't take any notice of things that other people tell him, because you do get completely stuck in what you're trying to do yourself, and somebody says, "Hang on a minute, what are you doing?" And we do that. I remember we had a pit stop, and you could just see the guy who had the release of the air jacks between the back of the bodywork and the aerofoil. And I went and said, "Go on, down you go." And he went, and I could see with his head shaking, "Why not put the damn car down?" No. And he said, and the wheels weren't on. So he was probably right.
He was on the ball that day.
He was on the ball that day, but yes. I wasn't. And you look at all these things, and you know that you're right, and you know you should have, but something had happened. They had to delay, and they hadn't got any wheels on. And so you do have to take notice. You have to change, and it's the guy that can change is the one that will finish at the top end, I'm afraid.
Trying to get an update on the number 48 car. And who better to speak to than Greg Murphy himself? He joins Owen Mildenhall now.
Greg, you've had a really solid run with the car, but the car's been on high stands in the garage for a few minutes. Looks like it's about to rejoin. What was the problem?
Mark had contact with another car earlier on, you probably saw it, and then had a spin and caused some more damage. So we came in and repaired the initial damage with some tank tape. Then the further damage made, we had to go and get a new rear section, and we should be back out in a few minutes. We broke a damper as well, so we'll be back out. You know the story, we won't give up. So we'll be out in a few minutes. So
brilliant, thanks Greg, best of luck.
Cheers mate.